Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Kent Daniel Bankowski, and this is Kentroversy Tapes podcast number 7. This afternoon, we have a very interesting interview in store for you. This is going to be an interview with Mr. Howard Strauss, the grandson of Dr. Max Gerson, a doctor from the early to mid part of the 1900s, who had a very successful cure rate in stage 4 cancer. Furthermore, Mr. Strauss is going to discuss the Gerson therapy and how this can help people with many other types of ailments besides cancer. In addition to that, this is a therapy program that I am in the process of beginning for myself. This was introduced to me by my best friend. This is the gentleman who named me Kentroversy, as I've explained in my writings. And this gentleman had also introduced me to this therapy program, which will help cleanse my liver from hepatitis side effects and complications that I have been experiencing as of late. So, with that being said, welcome to the Kentroversy Tapes, Howard Strauss.
Thank you very much for having me, Kent.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to speak with you. I am very interested in hearing more about this program. So I wondered if we could just begin today by you giving an overview of what this therapy program consists of.
Well, the Gerson therapy is an integrated medical system, not to be taken in parts or pieces. It needs to be taken as a whole. And what it consists of, or the underlying idea, so that you understand what we're getting at. The underlying idea is that all chronic diseases, and of course hepatitis and cancer and fibromyalgia and migraine are all considered chronic conditions. And chronic, of course, in allopathic medicine means they can't do anything about them. They're forever. They're incurable. But the Gerson therapy sees that all chronic diseases are really the results of toxicity, the lifetime of accumulated toxicity in the liver and in the body, and deficiency arising because we eat deficient, denatured, artificially grown and processed foods that have no life, no nutrients, enzymes left in them that our body needs. And over a lifetime of this simultaneous poisoning and starvation, the body loses its ability to fight off any kind of condition that any infectious agent, physical damage that may be done. So in order to restore the body's ability to repair itself and maintain homeostasis, which after all is the only function that the body really does. I mean, that's mm-hmm. what it needs to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it does it superbly well if you give it the right ammunition and the right nutrients. In order to return the body to the condition where it can repair itself and reverse these chronic conditions, we have to flood the body with perfect nutrients. And that's easier said than done. That requires the consumption for anywhere up to 2 years of 13 fresh pressed organic carrot and apple, green and apple and orange juices a day, 13. And when I say fresh pressed, I mean they have to be pressed every hour. This is a very rigorous program. Pressed and drunk immediately, fresh.
Mm-hmm.
So then you're getting the maximum benefit of the enzymes and the micronutrients coming into your system and nourishing your system on an hourly basis. Healing is such an energy-intensive function that it needs constant nutrients to be accomplished. And being that you're deficient in the first place, it doesn't have the resources, the reserves to draw upon that it needs to repair the damage that's been done.
I see.
You have to, for a couple of years, even though you may think you're feeling well now, you may think you can back off, that's not the case. Your body needs the constant support, the constant nutritional support that you're getting with these juices. But it's not just a juice diet. You're also getting three large vegan, that means no animal products whatever, vegan, salt-free, fat-free meals, organic food. So cooked food plays a good role in this therapy, because you don't want to just have a juice diet. You need the soft bulk of cooked foods to help move the material through your intestinal tract and eliminate toxicity. So you need the bulk in there to move your intestinal contents along. So you get three large vegan, organic, salt-free, fat-free meals, and the 13 juices a day. And that's a tremendous amount of calories, but as I said, it's something that your body needs in order to repair the damage that you've done over a lifetime.
Yes, I see.
That's the hyperalimentation part of it. The detoxification part of it is the very controversial coffee enema. And controversial being ridiculed by opponents of the therapy, who have generally not bothered to do the research and find out the effect of the coffee enema. The coffee enema, the caffeine is absorbed by the portal vein. I'm sorry, by the hemorrhoidal vein that's wrapped around your descending colon. It absorbs the caffeine and takes it and transports it into the portal venous system, the veins, and from there it gets transported directly to the liver. The liver is stimulated to release bile by the caffeine. And the bile, when it is released from the liver and dumped out into the upper intestinal tract, carries with it the toxicity that the liver has been accumulating. Now, during the early phases of the therapy, the liver is filtering. So much toxicity is being removed from your body, with all of the energy from the juices and the nutrients entering the cells, it's pushing out toxins from the cellular structure that have been deeply embedded over the course of a lifetime. Poisoning yourself with, from pharmaceuticals to recreational drugs, from food processing chemicals to pesticides and artificial fertilizers, and Lord knows how many different thousands of chemicals there are in our food that were never meant to be foods.
Yes.
So there's quite a bit of toxicity to be removed from a lifetime of abuse, and it gets pushed out of your cellular structure. It goes into your serum and then into the blood and then carried through to your liver, which filters it out of the bloodstream. Well, if you don't, there's so much toxin coming out of your cellular structure, especially for a cancer patient or some other serious illness. There's so much toxins coming out of your cellular structure and into the bloodstream that if it all hit the liver and the liver didn't get some support in helping it to dump this toxins out, it would collapse. Particularly remember that your liver, in order for you to have one of these chronic diseases, your liver must be highly compromised to begin with.
Yes.
Especially its attack on the liver, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But cancer can't happen if the liver is in good shape. It just cannot happen.
Right.
So we have to rebuild the liver first, and we can't rebuild it and have it overwhelmed by these toxins at the same time. So we have to give it support in emptying itself of these toxins. That's where the coffee enema comes in. And for the Gerson patient, so much toxicity is coming out in the early phases of the therapy that for at least a while, they're doing 5 a day, and often that is not all completely enough, especially during the healing reactions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there's a tremendous amount of healing going on, a lot of body processes, but the Gerson therapy, if you have been following what I've said, it uses your body's natural processes. It doesn't force the body to do one thing or another that it was not instructed to do in the first place. We're not cutting anything. We're not lopping anything off. We're not replumbing things. We're not taking organs out and so forth. We are simply using and stimulating the natural healing processes that you've been given as your birthright as a human being, just by being born.
Yeah, it's interesting because one of the doctors that I see for my current condition has me going into his cancer clinic on a monthly basis for iron infusions, IV infusions. And when I was in the day room with a bunch of other cancer patients, one of which was in stage 4 cancer, I initiated a conversation about the Gerson therapy to these people in this room. I spoke to the nurses about it, I spoke to the doctor about it, and I spoke to the other patients in the room about it. And it was a very interesting response that I got from these individuals. The patients were very, very interested in everything that I had to say about this. And when I gave them the information, I wrote down the websites and all the information that I knew at that time. This was about 2 weeks ago, I'm talking about. In addition to that, the nurses were very interested in hearing about this. One of the nurses commented to me that not everything we are able to do strikes me as being the answer of answers. And so I am very open to hearing more about this. Now, by the time I got to the doctor himself, he did not want to hear anything about this whatsoever, and especially when I mentioned homeopathics and mentioned again to him my reservation about allopathic treatment, he became argumentative. So is this representative of the type of response that you've seen?
Across the board.
Okay.
Across the board.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with doctors is even if they are slightly inclined towards even thinking about it, which in most cases they're not, they are so heavily attacked if they mention the word Gerson or holistic or things like that. In the state of Washington, if a doctor so much as mentions Gerson in the context of cancer, he is referred by the medical board for psychiatric examination. In other words, he must be crazy.
Wow.
It smacks of the old Soviet Union. If you don't believe in communism and espouse it totally, then you must be crazy, and they put you in a psychiatric hospital.
Wow.
In California, you lose your license in and are convicted of a felony. In New York, although by law you're supposed to be allowed to do that, more doctors are under attack and by lawsuit than any other state. So if they can't do it one way, they'll do it another way, and it makes it extremely difficult. The doctor will lose his malpractice insurance. Other doctors will testify against him. He'll lose his hospital rights, and so forth. The ways of disciplining doctors are relatively extreme and vast. So allopathic medicine is a $2 trillion a year industry,
mm-hmm.
and they will do everything in their power to maintain that cash flow, even though it's causing millions and millions of deaths.
Wow.
So if you go to a doctor, first of all, he was educated in a medical school
mm-hmm.
financed by drug companies.
That's right.
And the drug companies see to it that the curriculum consists of drugs, drugs, and more drugs.
Right, right.
And drugs, if you understand that all drugs are patented, is that correct?
That's correct.
All drugs are patented.
Yes, yes.
And you cannot patent a natural material.
That's right.
Therefore, all drugs are chemical molecules that never existed in nature, and your body has no idea what to do with them.
Mm-hmm.
So they are all, in the end, liver toxic. That is why we can't use any drugs at all, because we are literally poisoning the liver when we give drugs. That's why all of these terrible and lethal and crippling side effects come to light after a couple of years. And they have an interesting double standard. Drugs are approved very easily by the FDA, as long as they make a drug company a lot of money. But they don't have to be proven safe and effective. But if people start dying of a drug, the FDA will then make you prove that they are dangerous before they'll take them off the market. So in other words, it's totally biased towards the money-making pharmaceutical industry, which in the end has become the most profitable industry on the planet. On the planet.
Wow.
And it uses its considerable financial power to suppress any and all other kinds of medicine. This is an effort that started in the 1860s and 70s and was brought to fruition by the Rockefeller Foundation, along with the Carnegie Foundation, eliminating all forms of eclectic medicine. And the last thing in the world they want to do after all that effort and all that profit that it has reaped them is to see this emerge again. And they know that their product is unfortunately not held in very high regard by the American public. So instead of developing a better product, they suppress information about competitive products.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And doctors forget. They totally forget when you're sitting in front of them. They totally forget who signs the check on the front and who signs it on the back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they will pressure you, they'll become arrogant, argumentative, they'll yell at you, and so forth. If they were any other kind of service industry, they would be out of business in a week.
But yeah,
they have us
yeah.
so brainwashed mm-hmm. and so totally dependent on, we think we're dependent on them, that we're panicked that they'll throw us out of their office and not allow us to come back. So what the Gerson therapy does and what holistic medicine does is it encourages the patient to take control of his own health and be his own doctor, essentially. And this removes the power from the medical industry and the profit from the drug industry. And you can see why they're like cornered rats. They will not they're not happy about any kind of competitor showing its face.
Yeah, in fact, you know, I wouldn't be too surprised if you told me that you had been personally threatened by people like these.
Dr. Gerson himself was assassinated.
Yes, yes.
And I've not just been personally threatened, but when I had a clinic out in Sedona, there were attacks from several different directions, from the medical industry, from the pharmaceutical industry, from the diabetes equipment manufacturers, in subtle and very sneaky and underhanded ways. They have, the AMA has a dirty tricks department. Why would the American Medical Association have a dirty tricks department?
That's a good question.
Yeah,
very good question.
Yes.
You just mentioned the fact that Dr. Max Gerson had been assassinated.
Yes,
could you tell me a little bit about how that happened and so forth?
I can tell you some of it as fact, but some of it is only speculation because, of course, the bad guys don't keep paper trails around.
That's right.
Dr. Gerson was, for his entire career, prevented in the United States, prevented from publication of his papers. And then the medical profession would say, "Well, he never published, you see, so he must be having he must have some kind of something to hide."
Right.
But he submitted paper after paper to the American medical journals. And they rejected him. And I have stacks of rejection letters that I can show you of his articles.
Mm-hmm.
He then submitted those self same articles to the European and Asian medical journals, some of the finest in the world, and they published his work with alacrity. And then he brought them back to the United States, had them translated. And sent them off to the AMA, which never acknowledged their receipt, and to this day claims he never published, ignoring the fact that a simple search of Medline comes up with 50 or 60 of his publications in the finest medical journals in the world. So, you know, obviously this is it was clearly a conspiracy of silence.
Mm-hmm.
When that didn't work, toward the end of his life, he was getting elderly, in his late 70s, and he went on, in January 15th, 1957, he went on the Long John Neville show in New York City on WOR. And we have a recording of that interview. It's the only recording we have of his voice.
I see.
He said on this interview, he said he was going to write. He was in the midst of preparing a book with his entire his experience and his theory and his. Case histories and medical records and so forth, because he had not been allowed to publish in the American medical literature. And so he was going to publish his own book called A Cancer Therapy, Results of 50 Cases. And he was going to not only have it publish it at his own expense so that it couldn't be stopped by anyone else, which they had done in the past as well. And not only that, but when it was published, he was going to have it translated into as many languages as possible at his own expense, and if necessary, give it away all over the world. Well, you could almost hear the alarm bells going off in the halls of Big Pharma.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And within a year, he had fallen ill. He fell ill and had to stop working on his almost completed manuscript. When he nursed himself back to health, it took a couple of months. He nursed himself back to health. The manuscript was missing. At the same time, he discovered that his secretary had been suborned by one of his chief medical rivals, one of his arch enemies,
mm-hmm.
who had been dogging him for years, and who was paying her to steal his files and give them to the AMA.
Unbelievable.
Well, no, it's not unbelievable. We're talking about a $2 trillion industry, and this kind of thing, you know, this kind of thing can the presidents get assassinated over that kind of money.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So that they should do this kind of thing over a single doctor is not very surprising.
So, well, what I mean by that is it's just unbelievable to me the depths to which these people will stoop to do their dirty work.
Look, if there really is a cure for cancer,
mm-hmm.
then they are intentionally killing a couple of 100,000 people a year. So why would stealing some files be worse than that?
Yeah, that's pretty minor in comparison.
Minor.
Yeah, absolutely.
So he fired her immediately.
Mm-hmm.
But the manuscript was gone. He had to reconstruct the whole manuscript from scratch over the next year.
And that's the book that we have available today.
That's the book that's available today. A Cancer Therapy Results of 50 Cases.
And he rewrote the whole thing.
From scratch.
Wow. That's quite impressive.
Yeah. He published it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had it printed. He had 3,000 copies printed, and they sold out relatively rapidly. And he had another 3,000 printed, and mysteriously fell ill again.
Mm-hmm.
This time he had himself tested, 24-hour input output, and he found that there was a very high level of arsenic in his system. Arsenic? Where would he get arsenic? And you see, the only person, here's where it gets to be speculation,
mm-hmm.
because the only person who had access both to his files and his manuscript and his daily intake, like who brought him a cup of coffee in the afternoon, was his secretary, who we know was working for the opposition.
Right.
So the only way he could have gotten arsenic was from her hand.
It would appear so, yeah.
I'm sorry?
It would appear so, yeah.
And we know that the doctor who had been paying her to steal files was working for Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Research Center. And they were huge recipients of funds from the Rockefeller Foundation, which ended up with all of the rights to chemotherapeutic agents they developed. So it was all an interlocking scheme, I believe, orchestrated by Cornelius Packard Rhodes, who has been shown. Documented to be a murdering psychopath, and he was the Rockefeller Foundation's chief pathologist for years.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, so Dr. Gerson was not able to recover from this second illness, and he deteriorated and died, but it was pretty clear that he had acquired the arsenic from somewhere.
Now, that was in March of 59, correct?
That's right.
Yeah. And what were the years of his practice?
He arrived in the United States, a Jewish refugee from Nazi Germany,
mm-hmm.
in 1936, November.
Okay.
And he immediately started treating tuberculosis, which was his specialty.
Mm-hmm.
But but he did not set himself up as a tuberculosis specialist. He had had his run-ins with German medicine about being a specialist, so from then on, he considered himself a GP.
I see. Okay. Another thing that I'd like to talk about briefly is how the Gerson Institute got started in 1977. And
That's kind of an interesting story, too.
Yeah.
So Dr. Gerson, having sold out 3,000 books, had another 3,000 printed, and shortly thereafter expired.
Mm-hmm.
So now my mother was stuck, or his daughters were stuck with 3,000 books, and nowhere to sell them. So my mother started going to cancer conventions, and lecturing about the Gerson therapy and selling his books at the conventions. And at the same time as she was selling out of the next 3,000 books, the invitations to speak started picking up. And pretty soon, she was out of books, and she had invitations to speak and had to print more. So she started, you know, being a regular on the lecture tour
mm-hmm.
and selling Gerson therapy books. And then people, invariably, they'd read the book and they'd say, oh, this is fantastic. I want to have the Gerson therapy. Where can I get it? And of course, she had to inform them that Dr. Gerson was unable, nobody was able to take up his work because they were intimidated by the medical profession. So they were very disappointed. They, you know, here was this great technology and they had no access to it. And eventually one of those people said to her, how about if I provide you with a facility and the medical personnel and the licensing and everything else, and all you provide is the expertise, would you come out to Los Angeles and do that? And she had nothing else to do. She said, sure, why not?
Wow, that's an angel.
So she started at a place that was near the La Brea Tar Pits.
Uh-huh.
There was a boarding house. You don't need much more, with a kitchen and individual, you know, rooms with bathrooms and a dining room. And they did everything just right, just perfectly. And you know, my mother wasn't practicing medicine, and there were and if a patient needed help, they had to bring their own nurse or doctor with them. And it was going along just fine when the state of California came around with a copy of his book under their arm saying, you're not doing anything illegal here, but if you don't cease and desist immediately, we will construe it as illegal and you'll have to prove in court that you're not doing anything illegal.
And this was the state of California licensing board, or?
It was the Department of Health.
Right. Okay.
And they said, if you don't stop doing this right now, you're going to have to prove in court. And we have the entire resources of the state of California. And what do you have?
Yes, exactly.
So she had to close that place down.
Mm-hmm.
And then she was approached by some doctors from Mexico as to starting the therapy down there. And she said, fine. She started trained them how to do it and started a hospital down there. But then she needed some way of connecting patients with it. So she would go around and lecture to various cancer conventions, sell books, and then the patients would say, fine, how do I make arrangements to get to your clinic? And that was when they had to set up the Gerson Institute to be the intermediary to get the patients down there.
So
and that's what they've been doing ever since.
Wow, that's that is quite a fascinating story.
It all grew from demand rather than my mother saying, you know, I'm going to set up an institute and clinics and all kinds of things. It was demand.
Yeah, yeah. This idea that has come up in the past 3 or 4 years about something called the North American Union, which would be the merging of Canada, Mexico, and the United States.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that great?
Yeah. How does that concept or that possible future affect the Gerson Institute and everything that they're doing?
Well, badly, of course.
Mm-hmm.
If we are no longer, right now, the only reason we're able to function is because the United States has less influence in Mexico. The FDA has less influence in Mexico than they do in the United States. That's not to say they have none, and that's not to say they don't try constantly to, there's an office in San Diego of the FDA whose prime goal is to shut down Mexican cancer clinics. That's their mission.
Hmm.
Now, how would you feel if there was a Mexican activity in Tijuana whose main goal was to shut down businesses in San Diego?
Yeah, we'd be upset.
We'd be up in arms.
That's right.
But we do that to them without any compunction at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And So if the laws were all synchronized and harmonized, as they say, then we wouldn't be able to function there either. And that's part of what the big business and big pharma are trying to do. To say nothing of the population control problem that they're attacking very, very successfully.
Yes, yes, and also this demon-infested Codex Alimentarius plan is a part of this as well.
Yeah, it's all part of it. It's all part of the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. So do you have like plans of how you would react to such a thing if this does come to pass?
We can't make plans, to counter all of the dozens and dozens of nefarious and murderous initiatives of the U.S. government, big pharma, the oil companies, and the political unions, and who knows? I mean, there's so much going on that is against our health and our welfare that we can't possibly deal with all of it. We just deal with what we can.
Yeah, good point.
We have very limited resources, and they have unlimited. They have more money than God.
Yeah, that's pretty true.
The most profitable industry on the planet.
Yeah, when you're talking about trillions and trillions of dollars.
That's just the pharmaceutical. When you add in the food processing, artificial fertilizer, pesticide, the beef industry, the dairy industry, the pork industry, the junk food industry, you're talking many more trillions.
There are two main supermarket chains in my local area. One of them is owned by a local New York State family. Another one is owned by a concern from Europe. Now, what I've noticed is that drinking milk from both of these stores, the one store that is owned by the people from Europe has some sort of a steroid in it or some sort of an agent in it that makes me very sick when I drink it. The other store sells a milk product that does not have this adulterated ingredient, whatever it is. I have no idea. I just know my body doesn't tolerate it. But you're saying just to leave dairy.
Let me say this. Drinking milk at all,
mm-hmm.
first of all, is a very dangerous operation. You shouldn't be drinking milk.
Period. Okay. Okay.
Nobody should be drinking milk. On top of that, we damage milk by pasteurizing it. We damage animal protein and animal fat by heating it and making it. We make it carcinogenic. Number one. Number two, the fact that the USDA says that there is no mad cow disease in this country is a lie.
Yes, absolutely.
So the very fact that you're getting that you're consuming material from cows which may or may not be infected with mad cow disease is number two. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Number three is, did you know the maximum allowable level of pus that's allowed in milk by the USDA before it cannot be shipped across state borders?
I'm afraid to ask.
Oh, no, go ahead. You can take a wild guess. How many pus cells per liter?
I would say 100,000, maybe.
100,000, you think?
Yeah.
The USDA allows 750 million pus cells per liter before they will no longer allow it to be transported across state lines. Not before they will keep it from being consumed, but before they allow it across state lines. Now, the recent introduction of recombinant bovine growth hormone, RBGH, what that does, what RBGH does, is it increases the production of milk from a cow from 2,000 pounds per year to 50,000 pounds per year. So that puts the production equipment, the cow's udders, under tremendous stress and results in mastitis.
Mm-hmm.
Almost universal
mm-hmm.
mastitis of the cow. And the mastitis is an infection of the udders. And,
yep.
And that leads to tremendous increase in pus in the milk. In addition, there are other infectious, things in the milk, blood cells. There's quite a bit of blood, cow's blood because of the infection.
Mm-hmm.
And blood and pus, it's essentially what it is.
Wow.
And jeez. And 750 million per liter means almost 200 million per glass. That's what you're feeding a kid if you give him a glass of milk.
Oh, that's... Well, thank you for clearing that up.
You're welcome, and I hope you don't... I no longer want to look at a glass
of milk. Well, I'm going to tell you this. When we get off the phone, I'm going to go... dump out a couple containers out of my fridge.
And where are you going to dump it? Dump it in some place where it can't do too much damage.
It's got to go down the drain somehow.
Yeah. So whatever's down there.
Wow.
In addition, the bovine growth hormone doesn't all stay with the cow. You know, some of it is expressed in the milk as well,
mm-hmm.
and which of course affects the breasts of the female drinkers as well, and the hormonal system. So there's a lot of different damage that can be done. To say nothing of the residual hormones, antibiotics, and pesticides that come in just from how the cows are treated and how the fodder that they eat is treated. So there's all kinds of residual stuff coming in that milk besides milk. On top of which, excuse me, how many animals in the wild drink milk after infancy?
None.
Why?
It's not necessary.
Not only is it not necessary, it's dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We lose the ability to properly metabolize milk after age 5. after that, it can only be partially metabolized. We have these partial metabolites floating around in our system, and if we're lucky, they just get eliminated. But they don't always. You know, they can lodge places, form plaque, blockages and damage. We don't know what kind of damage, but it's they're partial metabolites which end up as toxicity.
Yes, absolutely.
And you know, a lot of people have milk allergies, dairy allergies, asthma. Asthma is one of those. There's a tremendous epidemic of asthma, especially among the black community and people of color. Caucasians are slightly less susceptible, and people of color are more susceptible to damage from milk. So what does our government do, knowing this? It pushes as much milk product as possible into the ghetto, into the you know, school lunch programs of the poor schools. This is literally genocide. Literally genocide.
You know,
and then the kids, you know, get obese, and they get asthma, and they get diabetes, and it's all from fat, milk fat, butter fat, and the milk products. It's appalling. It's cynical beyond belief. It's evil.
Yes, absolutely. I agree 100%.
Yeah, well, you can find out all this information. All you have to do is go, you know, go check on the web, you know, look about pus in milk, you know, and USDA standards.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I did happen to grow up on a farm, a working dairy farm. So I am slightly familiar with some of what you're talking about, although not to the extent that you're describing here today. I had no idea that it was that infested with this, you know, garbage, and we're being asked to stay healthy by consuming this.
No, we're being brainwashed.
Garbage.
Oh yeah,
milk,
the most perfect food.
Well,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
for cows, for baby cows.
Yeah.
Even baby cows don't drink it after they're weaned.
That is true.
Even cows don't drink it.
But
the thing is that the milk of an animal, of any mammal, is very highly specific to that mammal and to the needs of that mammal. So, for instance, the milk of a cow is intended to raise a little cow that needs to double its weight in 3 months, right? Or in 6 weeks, even.
Yes.
And the milk of a human being is meant to nourish a child whose weight doubles in what, a year, 6 months, a year? And instead is supposed to be nourishing its immune system and its brain. Well, if we feed an infant or a child cow's milk, what we're doing is we're raising a heifer. We're raising a young cow.
Yes.
And that's why all of these, you know, big stupid football players appear. Big dumb jocks, because they just don't have the nourishment that they need, the right kind of nourishment. They have instead the nourishment that you would give a cow.
So what type of reaction do people give to you when you talk about these issues with them in public?
All you have to do is if you ask a young mother, you know, with a child at her hip, if you ask her whether she would feed her child a glass of milk if she knew it had 100 pus cells in it, she'll recoil in horror. Absolutely not. How about 50? No. How about 25? No. None, right?
Right.
Then when you tell her how many, she'll never give the child another glass of milk ever.
Very interesting.
She would not even accept 50. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, where does she get off giving him a glass of 80 million?
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
wow. 80 million.
Of course.
Unbelievable.
With the residues of hormones and pesticides and antibiotics mixed in. I mean, this is a deadly brew.
Yeah, yeah, especially when you're talking about the explosion in hormones and in these vaccination shots that these animals have been increasingly taking more often as we go forward.
And then when they give these animals, they give them unconscionable doses of antibiotics.
That's right.
And partially it is to make them grow faster or give more milk or whatever and keep them from dying of some kind of disease because of crowded, unhealthy conditions. So they just give them lots and lots of antibiotics.
Yep.
When they do, they give them much stronger doses of much more antibiotics than we could get, and they develop antibiotic-resistant bacteria. So that if we then we're getting all of this the antibiotics through the cow and through the meat that we eat, we're getting all of that. So if we ever get a bug, it's going to be an antibiotic-resistant bug. And we will not be able to tolerate the kind of levels of antibiotic that these bugs have, you know, grew up in. So more and more of our antibiotics, because of the use of antibiotics in animal husbandry, more and more of these antibiotics are now useless for human use. 90% now or more are useless in human disease.
Yeah, yeah, that in itself is quite frightening, especially when we're talking about the possibility of this avian bird flu and all of these recreations.
Oh, that's a total scam. That's a total scam. There's not been a single case in the United States, much less a death, right? But Mr. Bush spent $2.5 billion. He really wanted to spend $7.5 billion, but he spent $2.5 billion stocking up on Tamiflu, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, do you know what that was about?
I'm sure it was about a kickback to somebody who donated a bunch of funds to his campaign.
Oh no. It was better than that.
Okay.
The patent Tamiflu. Mm-hmm. Is owned by a California company named Gilead Sciences.
Okay.
And the minute that Mr. Bush announced he was going to spend $7.5 billion on Tamiflu, the stock of Gilead Sciences skyrocketed.
Oh, sure it did. Yeah.
And the largest stockholder, the former CEO of Gilead Sciences, was the largest stockholder. And became, you know, made I think $40 million overnight. The name? Donald Rumsfeld.
Yeah, doesn't surprise me in the least.
Not a single case of avian flu has come to the United States. Number two, the vaccine itself has shown itself to be not only not helpful but dangerous,
mm-hmm.
killed people.
Mm-hmm.
Number three. They haven't even said that avian flu can jump from person to person and become a pandemic, because in order to do that it would have to mutate. This is an interesting statement from an administration that doesn't believe in evolution.
Yes,
it would have to mutate, if it mutated, then the vaccine would not be any good. Would it?
No, it would not.
But in order to make Rumsfeld rich now, they had to do it before before there was a possibility of possible mutation.
So once again, folks,
the corruption is amazing in this government.
Yeah, yeah. We find ourselves yet again with another story about how profit is placed above people, health is placed below anything related to business concerns and patents and who owns what and who controls what. And it's very enlightening to have shared some time with you today, Howard. I really do appreciate it. I hope we can do this again at some time in the future.
I'd welcome it.
I appreciate that. And I'm going to be very interested to hear what my listeners are going to take away from hearing you say these things today. Because just as I had mentioned, I grew up on a farm. And some of this that you had just said about the milk, I knew already, but not to the extent that you had just described. And it was quite shocking.
This is not the kind of thing that the dairy industry or the newspapers or anyone else wants you to know.
That's correct. And that's exactly the type of information that I try to present and concentrate on are things that are taboo, things that are off the table, so to speak, because oftentimes those are the things we need to know the most.
You need to know it to save your own life.
That's correct.
May I point people to a couple of websites?
Absolutely.
You saw that documentary, Dying to Have Known, on the Gerson Therapy?
Yes, sir, I did.
We have a trailer for that on the website DyingToHaveKnown.com, and Charlotte Gerson's new book on the Gerson Therapy, which will be available to ship on August 1st, can be previewed and seen and purchased from GersonWay.com.
Mm-hmm.
GersonWay. Actually, GersonWay.com is the ebook pointer, and HealingTheGersonWay.com is a way to purchase the book itself. So it's available both in print form and in ebook form.
Very good, very good. And as I had mentioned, I had received some of those books recently myself because I am going to be doing this therapy for myself, for my own health reasons. And this is why I'm going to be presenting this information on an ongoing basis so that my listeners can follow this as I go through this because my best friend did this for himself recently. And the changes that I saw in him were remarkable in such a short period of time.
You'll experience, if you do it, you will experience the same benefits as well.
Mm-hmm. And I'm greatly looking forward to that. So thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Howard. I greatly appreciate the opportunity to speak with you again. And all the information about the websites and the books and all the associated links will be put into the show notes. And this will be, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, Controversy Tapes Podcast Number 7, which will be going live on Monday, the 9th of July.
Fantastic. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it, Ken.
Thank you very much, Howard. You have a good day now. Bye now.